call?
Speak your mind. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 2 o'clock. My normal time. Back to it, baby. Let's go. 3 more hours till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. 888-808-1019. You can also hit me up on X or Twitter, whatever you call it, as my man DeLoria did. And he let me know with a picture. Yes, he remembers the Pizza Hut commercial. Love that Pizza Hut commercial. Love it. Takes me back. Takes me back, that right field baseball, Little League Baseball Pizza Hut commercial. And I haven't seen many Pizza Huts anymore. I mean, remember Pizza Huts that had that unique look. Although all those, you know, different restaurants did. You know, McDonald's kind of had a look for a while. Now it's completely much more modern and all done up. But Pizza Hut had that red roof and the hanging green lamp, like the hanging lamps with like the green and yellow stained glass. They all had that same look. Now, I can't even tell you the last time I went to a Pizza Hut. Not that we ever did a lot. We live in New York. Not to knock Pizza Hut. Hey, if you want to be a part of the program, Pizza Hut, I will. You know, I will eat Pizza Hut all day long. Meat lovers, bring it. I remember they used to have the. There was one by me, so I used to go to Pizza Hut every once in a while, but such good New York pizza. Yeah, I love pizza. You know me, and I don't know if you've heard my opinion of pizza. It's okay. I like pizza. Pizza's very good. It's just way down the list. Like if someone just walked in here right now, kicked in the door and said, "Hey, I'm starving, I'm buying, what are we getting?" Like the last thing I would say is, "Order a pie." Like it's the last thing I would say. I'd say, is there a Chinese food place open? Let's get some tacos. You guys want burritos? I don't know. Anything. The last thing I would say is let's order a pie. Doesn't mean I wouldn't like the pie if it came here, but it's just, I don't know. People talk about it like it's the greatest food of all time. Ask someone like, "Oh, if you were stranded on a desert island and you could only bring one kind of food with you, what would you bring?" "Oh, pizza." Pizza wouldn't even cross my mind. Pizza. And this is now, I got to be careful who's listening, because I am the son-in-law of a pizza maker. I mean, the guy built restaurants based on his pizzerias. So, love your pizzas, Vito. The best. But I like your squid ink pasta with, you know, lobster and shrimp better. I think that's fair. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. All right, the Mets. So, as we get ready for the Subway Series tonight, Cole versus Peterson. Big game, big series, big two games, as always. A lot of fun. The Mets will be without two distinct players. There will be no Diaz, as you just heard. 10-game suspension. He will not appeal. I don't think appealing made much sense anyway. I'd rather have him. I know this is blasphemy. I don't know how many people feel this way. If I'm the Mets, I'd rather have Diaz for Pittsburgh at the tail end of his suspension, then wait 2 days and miss and catch these games and miss the games against the Pirates. You need to beat the Pirates. They're the ones that are jumbled up in the middle of the NL playoff race. The Yankees are 2 games on the schedule. Let's be honest. Inner city rivals, the fans get up for it. Building's going to be packed, going to be a playoff atmosphere, but ultimately it's 2 games. You're not battling the Yankees for anything. But they're going to be without Diaz, obviously, and they're going to be without Marte, who goes on the IL with bone inflammation. Not even a bone bruise. Bone inflammation. His bone's inflamed. I didn't even know bones could get inflamed. That sounds like bone infection to me. I don't know. How do you get inflamed bone? But he did. And he's going to be, I saw 2 weeks nothing. So I don't know when he'll be back, but he's going to rest for 2 weeks. And in the meantime, what do the Mets do in right field? That is the question. So you could play Taylor a lot in the outfield, more than he's been playing. You could play Stewart out in the outfield. You can't call up a pitcher, obviously, for Marte because they are limited to the amount of pitchers they have on the roster with the suspension of Diaz. So you're definitely going to have to call someone up. Now, I would think, looking at it, for me, especially since they, the way Iglesias has played and their need to still play McNeil almost every game. And that's the real only value of McNeil for me now. At 210 or whatever he's hitting, the only value of McNeil is his versatility defensively. So when you're down a Marte, now you can play Iglesias at second and you can put McNeil in right. Now, I don't love that. I'm tired of McNeil. I think McNeil should be treated as a bench player. I understand not cutting him. There was a time while the Mets were struggling, I said play him in hopes of being able to move him. Now they're winning. It's gone so far down the line, I'm not sure that's plausible, and I'm ready to move on from Jeff McNeil. Or at least not consider him a starter for my team. It's been long enough. So I think they should consider him a bench player. They haven't treated it as such. So I think you could obviously see Jeff McNeil in right field. You could see Iglesias at second, and they can go about it that way. I mean, that's really some offense from your right fielder, but in a 2-week pinch, I suppose that's what they could do. They could call up Beatty. He's been playing at second base. I don't know how comfortable they are with him at second base. It's only been, less than a month now that he's gotten some regular reps at second base. And then there is what I would guess most Met fans would want, and that is to bring up Acuña, who is obviously one of their top prospects, who got off to a miserable start this year, but now has been hot for the last 2 or 3 weeks, playing much, much better. And in a hot streak right now, even with limited experience in the minors or whatever with the Mets, could you bring up Acuña here to come play? And he does play. He's played a little bit of both. He's played some outfield. He's played some infield. You could bring him up in the absence of Marte, and now throw him in the mix of playing second base, playing outfield. I mean, those are possibilities. Beatty's been here before. Beatty's already on the 40-man roster. That's probably the easiest of fixes. There are, as Fliegelman was telling me, you could pop on Fliegs with some of their names. Some of the guys who are in the minors right now who have some infield and outfield versatility.
They've guys Luke Ritter, who's a Mets draft pick from a few years ago, and Rylan Bannon, who's from outside the organization that they brought in.
Trace
Those guys
Thompson.
Have played all. Ritter's played first, second, third in the outfield, and Bannon has played second, third, short, and the outfield all at Syracuse this year. So they can kind of be moved around anywhere. Right. Ritter's having a much better hitting season in AAA.
And you said Trace Thompson.
They do have Trace Thompson, the former Dodger, Clay's brother, who has like 16 home runs in AAA. So only an outfielder, but obviously he could fill the Marte spot.
All right, so there are a couple options here. I don't know what the Mets will do as they're playing fairly well. I don't know, if I don't think they would want to bring up Acuña for a short stint, would be my guess, especially right now. I don't think if Marte were gone for a while and if you knew he was gone for a long period or the season and you want to bring up Acuña and give him a chance to win the job and play a lot and you want to see these young kids play and give him some run until he proves he can't be here, and it's so bad that you need to send him back down, I would think that's more plausible than, hey, come up here for 2 weeks and then get sent right back down. I don't know if that's kind of what they want to do. Beatty's already been up here. Beatty's already on the 40-man roster. I think that is very likely the scenario. And again, I think you're going to see a lot of time McNeil out in the outfield, unfortunately. I think that's what this team has pretty much resided to do, is play Jeff McNeil against right-handed pitching. I don't know why. But they'll have no Marte in the series. They'll have no Diaz serving the suspension. The bullpen is short. The pitching staff is short. And that's why for Peterson and Manaea, it is going to be important to go deep against the Yankee lineup, not even to win these games necessarily, but just to save bullpen over the next 10 days. The next 10 days, you're going short because of this nonsense with Diaz. So every start, not just against the Yankees, and yes, you want to go start, that helps you win. If the pitcher goes deep, he's pitching well, helps you win the game, give, you know, keeps the Yankees from the underbelly of this bullpen. But ultimately, it's not even just that. Yes, that's true. But you also got to save them for the next 10 days. You're going to, Diaz, this is going to be the case with the Astros. It's going to be the case against Washington, which is a big series. And the first game against Pittsburgh. That's, you need the bullpen to sustain, so that's going to be important for these guys to go deep into the game. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Paul in Jersey City. What's up, Paul?
What's up, Chris? How are you doing?
Oh, good, Paul. How, you scared me for a second, Paul. I was about to just flip out on you, Paul. What's going on? How are you?
Good, Chris. Chris, a.k.a. the Francesa Tree, like I always like to call you.
Yeah, no, I'm a member of the Francesa Tree, no doubt. Me, Licata.
Licata and whoever else. I know. Anyway, so real quick, first of all, the Yankees and the Mets, it's going to be a nice little sweep there. The Mets will sweep the Yankees, the two-game series, number one. Mm-hmm. I'm not even worried about that. Yes, you know, I know you're a big Yankee fan, but I'm just telling you, that's what's going to happen.
What's wait? Wait one more time. I'm sorry, I missed you there. You broke up for a second. Who's gonna you? The Mets are gonna sweep the Yankees.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
what
yes.
makes you say that though? You can't just tell me it and move on to the next thing. Why?
Okay. It's just the way they're surging right now.
Okay.
The Mets.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt they're playing they're of the two teams. The Mets are playing the better brand of baseball. There's no doubt.
Absolutely. Now let's go to. I know you said you're gonna mention about OG Arunobi.
Yeah.
So I'm asking myself. I said, let me call you.
Yeah.
What do you think about father and son? Meaning the father is the GM, whatever, president, and then the son is the agent of OG, right? You think these two guys are gonna sit down and have a nice conversation and come up with a, you know, solution? Like, okay, how much he wants this and that and that.
Yeah. I mean, listen, he's going to be pursued. The 76ers are the team that's been mentioned the most. He's going to get, now they can, the Knicks can offer him more money than anybody else if they give him the max. I don't know if they're going to want to give him the max. It's going to be upwards of $30 million though. That's what he's going to get. So I would think there's a very good chance that he's going to be a Knick. I do. I think he liked it here.
Oh, okay.
I think he fit like a glove, but ultimately, I mean, we'll see how much other teams offer him or what the Knicks are willing to offer him. I don't think they'll go max. I don't think they're going to give him the 4-year big max contract. I just don't think they want to do that with him.
Oh, okay. Okay, and then you're still going to make your point about him and somebody else, right? Later
yes,
on?
Yes. I'll make it right now, Paul. I'll make it right now for you. Since we're doing OG Anunoby, if you hadn't heard, Paul just referenced it. OG Anunoby has officially declined his player option. He's now a free agent, which was just a formality. Everybody knew he was going to be doing it, so now he's a free agent. And the question is, what will the Knicks do? And he's obviously rumored to be back with the Knicks. As I've said a couple times here, Philadelphia is another team that's been hot on his trail. And here's what I'll say. I love OG Anunoby. And I love what he brought to the Knicks. And I love the team that he transformed them into. There is no doubt. He's not the best player. Brunson's the best player. And when healthy, I mean, Randle is even arguably a better player, certainly a better scorer. They were a solid team that had a good chance to make the playoffs, if not a very good chance. OG Anunoby came and transformed them into something else. There are very few moves. I'm trying to think. You know, my mind always goes Yankees first, right? Just whatever. It is what it is. Deal with it. David Justice in 2000 was an enormous trade for the New York Yankees that immediately paid dividends and felt like helped them immensely. But there are very few moves where a trade is made mid-season and instantly, not only does he play well, that's happened, sure, that's no big deal. Guys come wherever, get traded, play well, sure. But transform the team into and help them reach a higher level. And there's no doubt OG Anunoby coming over from the Knicks, which is still funny when you think of it, because the instant fan reaction was just, what a disaster. We didn't want to trade these guys for Mitchell, which, by the way, it sounds like Mitchell's going to sign the max contract with Cleveland. So as we begin to think about star chasing with the New York Knicks, I think we can forget the Donovan Mitchell chase. That is now gone. He's going to be with Cleveland. And now I guess we turn our sights to Paul George as the next big guy who's possibly going to be out there as a star player. Now, we'll get to George later, and whether he's a star player. I mean, he's not quite the defender he used to be, but still an excellent defender. He can shoot. Very good player. Injuries as well. I mean, but I don't know. We'll get to that later. But OG Anunoby. I love OG. Transformed the team, like I said. Perimeter defense. Even better, his ability to score, especially in the game he got hurt in the playoffs. I mean, he scored 29 points in like 28 minutes. I think if he leans into that part of his game, I think there's an even another level for OG to get to. And I think Tibbs is the guy to get him there. I think they work perfect together inside that system. He's the exact kind of player who fits what Tibbs is trying to do and fits this team like a glove. And I really hope the Knicks can bring him back. But here's my problem. And it's obvious, as we're talking about Stanton all day, the guy gets hurt. The guy is clearly hurt all the time. And right now, the New York Knicks, currently as constituted, have two of their starting five as guys who get hurt all the time. And in a sport where you play five guys at a time, I can't have two out of five be guys who get hurt all the time. And while, you know, when you say sign OG Anunoby, if he gets hurt all the time without Mitchell Robinson getting hurt all the time, it's still a problem. You don't want to see him hurt all the time, whether his teammates are healthy or not. But I can't build a team that has a starting five of OG and Mitch Robinson. Can't do it. I just don't think it makes sense. So right now, I think the Knicks agree. And I think the Knicks, as rumor has it, the Knicks are trying to find a way to trade Mitchell Robinson and keep Hartenstein. Hartenstein and OG, I'm on board. And hell, if Mitchell Robinson could stay healthy, I'd be on board too with that. I mean, I like Mitchell Robinson. Now, I thought Hartenstein changed them a little bit and gave them more of an offensive option. He had that like little push shot. He was better at the free throw line, much better passer. Mitch is an excellent rebounder, and Hartenstein proved to be a better rebounder than we thought. I still, as much as he got the 19 rebounds, I think the first game he played after Mitch got hurt, he got 19 rebounds, but he proved to be a better rebounder than we thought. Mitch Robinson's a premier rebounder. He's a premier shot blocker, premier defender. I mean, you know, putting, you know, his ability to play Embiid in that series was important. Like, he is a very good, very solid player that I wish would stay healthy, but I can't have those two players together. So if the Knicks are building this team and thinking about bringing OG, then I think trading Mitchell Robinson is a must. I can't have that many injury-prone players. I just can't. So that's, for me, the way they go about building. But I think that this Knicks team is kind of operating with the same idea that it's been operating really since Leon Rose got here. And now they're just in a better position to do it, which is build a solid basketball team, which they have now, a good, legitimately, you know, top half of the Eastern Conference playoff team. And if they bring OG Anunoby back, certainly that's what they have with Randall and obviously Brunson. They're going to plan for that while keeping their minds open for a superstar. I think that's how they're playing it. I don't think there's any doubt. They are going about building the team they had last year with some tweaks, because nothing is ever the same or stagnant. But they'll be open for the superstar. Now, what superstar becomes available? I don't know. Right now, the biggest name out there that seems like it could become available is Paul George, who again is a very good player. He fits into my narrative where I still want Jalen Brunson to be the leader of the team. And if there is a player you bring here, the level of superstardom that surpasses on such a level, Jalen Brunson, then he's no longer the star of the team. Now there are guys will. I mean, I'm not going to go get Joker because I'm afraid he'll take over the leadership of the team. Like you get one of the great premier players, you're not going to get Giannis. I'm not going to say nah, forget it. I can't get Giannis. I need Jalen Brunson to be the leader of the team. I'm just saying I'd prefer that. I think. Because that's how much we love him. That's how great he's been. That's what he's meant to the team. That's the kind of leader I think he is, especially if he's going to take this contract and take his extension now and be that kind of team player to help put pieces around him. I would love to see a superstar who comes in and fits in and as well be a great player, maybe even the better player, but fits in. And I do think Paul George in some way fits into that mold for me. And while Giannis is probably the dream, you know, as he's been unhappy and it just doesn't feel like it's a great fit with him and Dame, you know, they're all ruining the day they got rid of Holiday. Like everyone's killing him for getting rid of Holiday as he goes to Boston and wins a championship. But I'm not sure how that grouping will work. They did kind of acquiesce him and get another superstar in the building, but that's always the dream, is that he's unhappy in Milwaukee and that would be the ultimate coup to get Giannis. But as I look around, I'll be totally honest with you. I was thinking about this the other day. If I'm going to put it in that narrow prism of a superstar, great player, who might even be better than Brunson, but can come in here and fit in and it not be his team, where it could still be Brunson's team. Even though he's the great player, even if he is the better player. I'm not saying he has to be the better player, but are there any stars who are just as good as Brunson or better who could come in here and still the dynamic of the team be Brunson the leader? Now, it doesn't have to be Brunson the final shot. Doesn't have to be Brunson the overall offensive firepower. This player clearly would have to take on all of that, some of that, most of that. Now, we forget, because it's been so long, Randle took on some of that, most of that, all of that at different times. But Randle will never be Brunson now, right? That's clear. Brunson's better. It's Brunson's team. But is there someone you could go get who fits in? And I got to be totally honest with you. As I was thinking about it, and I've talked about, I think Booker fits that on some level. I think Paul George could fit that, as we're talking about him as a name that could be coming loose. But I think the cream of the crop, the absolute best, and I know he's a bit older, I know, but I still think you could bring Durant in here and it'd still be Jalen Brunson's team, only because of his particular attitude, right? The reason why he chose Brooklyn as opposed to New York was to avoid coming in being the savior, I would think. He likes to just come, ball, go home, play video games, or whatever it is he does. Fit into a system that he feels will improve his game, give him a chance to win, play ball, go home. That's what Durant has said over and over again. And in my mind, as great as he is, and yes, now, you know, coming off, I mean, if you look at his numbers and his statistics, and he still had a very good year. He's still putting up the same kind of numbers. They didn't have a great year. Obviously, had a terrible playoff series. His connection to Brooklyn already, older, you know, still had an Achilles. I don't know if it's a perfect fit, but he's the best player that I think they could get. Come in here and fit in. And it'd still be Brunson's team, even though Durant's the better player, even though Durant's the guy who might get the final shot, even though Durant is the guy the offense might run through most of the time. I still think you could bring him in here and it'd be Brunson's team. And that's the only guideline I'm working with in this particular conversation. Because obviously, yeah, you want to get Giannis. Obviously, yeah, there are other superstars you would want to get. But I think the two, if you could figure out a way to get either one of those two, Booker or Durant from Phoenix, those would be the superstars, I think, come in here and fit perfectly inside this current unit with Thibodeau as the head coach and with Jalen Brunson as the leader of the team. But that's neither here nor there. We don't know if either any of that is possible or any other star for that matter. So I think the Knicks are doing what they've always done, which is go to try and build the best team they can. Last year, they had one hell of a team that was playing for about a month as good as any team in the NBA, ultimately run down by injuries, and they're willing to give it another shot, and they're going about building that, maybe with some subtle changes, but going about building a run-it-back year with the mindset of let's keep everything open in case a superstar shakes loose that could fit us perfectly. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Mick Monagle here with you, so that's the Nick talk. Tell me what you think. You want OG back? You willing to pay a max contract for him? How much is it going to take to keep him away from Philadelphia? Can you pair Mitch Robinson and OG Anunoby in the same starting five and feel comfortable with it? Can you rely on that much of your starting five being as injury prone as those two players have been? And then if there is a superstar, is Paul George someone who he's the name right now of someone who could be the first superstar to shake loose? Is that a name you would like? Is that a guy who would be worth, you know, moving on from Randall? Because I don't know how you have both. Or do you have your eyes set for even better and greener pastures? 888-808-1019. Mick Monagle here with you. We'll also, as it is, of course, Subway Series. We're getting back into the baseball games. No doubt. But again, I think it's time someone stood up here on this microphone and told the truth about a particular moment in the 2000 World Series between the Yankees and the Mets. I think it needs to be said.
When this happened, you talk about it on The Fan.
A high pop-up. He's going to do it. At shortstop, Jeter. Jeter on the outfield grass makes the catch. The Yankees win. The Yankees win. And Doc Gooden pitches a no-hitter.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 234, Mick Monagle here with you, 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Give me a call. You hit me up on Twitter, X, whatever you call it, at CMACWFAN. So we're talking a little bit of basketball right there, as OG Anunoby is now a free agent after declining his player option. So we talked a little Knicks. As the draft is coming, it's kind of viewed as kind of a down draft, but the Knicks will have two picks, 24, 25, and then a second round pick, number 38. We'll see what they do there. But other NBA news, J.J. Redick was introduced as the new head coach of the Lakers, who obviously were turned down by Dan Hurley, and then were forced, settled. Ended up hiring J.J. Redick. It sounded like that was kind of their first choice, and then the Dan Hurley thing kind of just suddenly dawned on them or realized it became a possibility, and they went after it hard. And I think, and, you know, J.J. gave a couple of really good answers. I'm going to play one for you here. But I thought he gave a couple of good answers in his press conference. One about Danny Hurley when asked, and he's like, hey, you know, Dan Hurley has just won back-to-back NCAA championships. He comes from a lineage of great head coaches. I was not upset that they didn't immediately run to hire me with my experience of coaching an eighth grade basketball team. Like, I think I understood that they were, that, you know, it's not like being the second fiddle here is some sort of massive insult, which I think is something, I mean, that's a good perspective. It's a healthy perspective and an understanding of your own, you know, worth and self-importance of the moment of being hired as the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, no less. I mean, it's not, you're not the Wizards head coach, not to knock the Wizards, but you get what I'm saying. It's the freaking Lakers. So I thought that was a really good answer. And then he when asked about this, I thought this was an honest and surprising and cavalier a little bit, but also honest answer to a question about any misconceptions that people may have. Because obviously this is it's a bold hire. It's a guy who's been doing podcasts, which, by the way, he said he's going to be done doing podcasts as long as he's the head coach. So if you were a big fan of the J.J. Redick and LeBron James podcast, I regret to inform you that you will not be able to listen to that anymore. But, you know, I mean, the guy's been doing TV. He just did his first year as a, you know, color man on the ABC broadcast, the NBA Finals he just did. And obviously he was doing ESPN shows, getting into fights with Christopher Mad Dog Russo. But, I mean, he's a player. He's a role player, which I do think make better head coaches than superstar players for one easy reason. They understand the struggle better. And I think it's the same reason we, especially in baseball, we've seen it. And in basketball, great head coaches, great players who become coaches have a tough time understanding why you can't understand something or understanding why players aren't as adaptable or can't pick something up or don't see it the way they see it because they're greats. Where J.J. Redick struggled in this league, played for a long time, can shoot, understands the new age offense and where basketball is going, much like, remember, Adam Gase was coaching where offense was going. So was J.J. Redick. But it's a risky hire. There's no doubt about it. It's an interesting, risky hire for this franchise. And so when asked if there's any perceptions about him or, you know, the way he'll coach or just the process or anything, are there any misconceptions about this whole thing personally or the situation that you'd like to address and clear up for us? When that question was posed to him, this was his answer.
It's a valid question, and I've certainly heard everything. You know, it's been a really interesting 6 weeks or so, just in terms of you know, being part of the engagement farming industry. You know, it's been really interesting. However, I don't really have a great answer for your question because I really don't give a f-. Like, honestly, I want to coach the Lakers. I want to coach the team. I don't want to dispel anything. I don't. I want to become a great coach in the NBA, and I want to win championships, and I want my players to maximize their careers. That's all I care about.
That's a great answer. I mean, you don't have to curse necessarily. I love the guy. Me and Fliegelman both like looked up at each other. The guy in the back goes, oh, and then if you really listen to it, about 4 seconds later, you could hear him quietly all the way in the back and go, I love that. But I mean, I've two things. One, I've never heard of being a podcaster as the engagement hunt farming industry. Engagement farming. That's an interesting term. As he's been in the engagement farming industry. I like it. But to have that, I mean, that is just a really solid answer that I don't care about proving people wrong. Because a lot of us do. And a lot of us are fueled by it. But to say, yeah, I don't care about any misconceptions. I want to coach this team. I want to make my players better because that's all I care about. I just thought it was a good answer. It was a good, and it showed self-confidence, honestly, to curse like that. I mean, it's different. Not that it matters. He could be, you know, it's not like he's the first coach ever to curse, but in his first press conference, coming from being a podcaster, jumping into it, being under the pressure and under the gun of everybody doubting him, everybody, you know, I don't know about rooting for his failure, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of haters and a lot of, you know, people who will harken back to other coaches who have failed and expected. You know, we saw different circumstances, as they all are, but here in this town, Derek Fisher was a disaster as a coach relatively quickly off the court to right behind the bench with no coaching experience. Disaster. Steve Nash was an absolute disaster for the Nets, and he had immense talent. Now, hard talent to push all in one direction, clearly. But, I mean, we've seen coaches who are very smart, who are great players. Nash, two-time MVP, back-to-back MVP. Derek Fisher in a winning program with the Lakers and worked with Phil Jackson and understood the triangle God knows you needed to understand the triangle if you're going to coach the Knicks during that time period. Related to the players, a little bit too much, though. And that was an absolute disaster. So, I mean, this is a bit of a risky hire. And for him to have that self-confidence, to go, yeah, I don't give a crap about all that. I don't give an F about that. All I care about is coaching this team and being, you know, being the best coach I can be and getting these players to be the best team they can be. Now, it's going to be difficult. And he's already had a relationship with LeBron. It's clearly going to change. The dynamic of great player to role player, talking about the great players, whatever, on a podcast, sitting there sipping wine on leather chairs is a little bit different than being the head coach. And obviously, head coaches don't have a long history with LeBron James. So it's going to be an interesting situation for him. But I think he exudes confidence. And I think that's a big part of it. You have to. You have to. And he absolutely exudes confidence. So we'll see if it's a good hire. My initial thought is to probably go along with the conventional wisdom that it probably won't be. But who knows? I'll be rooting for him. I don't like him because right now I've told you my son's kind of a Lakers fan, which is bothering me. And I just got him a Lakers jersey for his birthday. Just got him a LeBron James Lakers jersey. Now, you want to know why he's a Lakers fan? Not because of the history. Not because he doesn't go all the way back to George Mikan when they were in Minneapolis. He does know who Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is and Magic Johnson and James Worthy. But that's not why. You know why? Because his school colors are purple and gold. That's it. Plain and simple. Purple and gold. And so now he's a Lakers fan, and I got to buy him a jersey, and I'm sure he'll be rooting for J.J. Redick and the Los Angeles Lakers. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. But that's a good answer. That's a good first press conference. He seemed confident. He gave a couple of good answers, a little self-awareness as well as self-confidence. And we'll see how it goes. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother, I'm back. Good morning, sir. How you doing,
Don? Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. You know me. I want to ramble for a minute. But
no.
You know, I was like...
You, Val?
I'd like
no
to talk
way.
To Nick with you. But if I could get 2 seconds to say a couple of things Yankees real quick.
Sure.
All right. So I tried to call you last week. I think it was last week, Thursday. Your Friday.
Okay.
And I was running for the train and I couldn't get to make it. But as far as the Yankees are concerned, 2 things quick. What Boone said in the press in the post game conference on that Thursday into that Friday was kind of what I wanted to say to you, because I think it's like, you know, we did as much as we did to get the record that we have right now so that we could absorb some adversity like we're going through right now. And this is just a little bit of a rough patch. And to his credit, like he said, you know, there were some things he said in that press, and I feel bad because it's a few days gone now and it's out of everybody's mind. But he mentioned things like, we just got to get tighter. We have to understand that the game is not as easy as it has been. And we have to, you know, dig within ourselves to get what we need. And that sounded to me like he was talking to the guys, because it's funny. The next night they won. I think they won that first game against Atlanta. And if you listen to even what Judge was saying, it was almost like he was, you know, repeating the same thing. We have to get on top of, you know, what we're actually doing, what we can control on the field. That being said, that Stanton thing hurts a little bit, because I really felt like he was helping to really lengthen the lineup as far as the offensive lineup is concerned. And with him out, it changes that a little bit. I feel good about it, because I think a lot of the conditioning that he did, the fact that they're talking about tightness and not an absolute pull of the hamstring, is a little bit different. Tiki mentioned something in Evan and Tiki's show, and I don't know if, like, now is probably not the time to deal with it because the season is going on, but they said something about a kid named Watson out of Green Bay who had some kind of issue where, like, there was something where they detected, like, an imbalance either in the way he was training or something that was going on, an imbalance in, you know, I guess between the two legs. And once they got that corrected, they're hoping that maybe that'll stop him from getting as many hamstring pulls. I don't know if that's something for Stan to look at.
No.
And I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, if you heard Tiki talking about it.
I did not, no. Christian Watson. Yeah, I mean, I haven't even heard that. I didn't even know that about Christian Watson, that he was having leg injuries and they found some sort of...
It surprised me, too. Yeah. It was some kind of procedure where they did something to figure out... I don't know if it was something to do with the way he was training or if it was something to do with just like a natural imbalance. But they found, they detected something where maybe he was overworking that muscle compared to the other side, and that was what was causing the imbalance, because he was getting the same thing like Stan, always the left hamstring, always... You know, whether it was the left or the right, but it was always that one side that kept pulling up, you know, late.
Right.
So, you know, maybe that's something to look at. As far as the Knicks are concerned, all right, a few things real quick with what you're talking about. The OG thing, well, firstly, Brunson. That was something I wanted to talk to you about last week, because you mentioned about him with the team-friendly contract that he's doing. Yeah. And I love that so much, because I feel like he's putting accountability not just on the other teammates, but also on the higher-ups and management. It's like, I'm giving this back to you, just like Tom Brady was doing. I'm giving this right. back to you, but it's for you to do things of with course. The team. So it kind of puts a certain amount of onus on them to make sure that they keep up with everything that's going
on. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, yeah, I don't know if I agree with that, where other than you're 100% right, he's giving it to them, but I don't think he has any concerns. I don't think he's making a statement to the front office. They're going to spend money. It's a cap sport. They're going to go right on the borderline of the cap. They're going to spend any money they have available to spend. I don't think there's any. I don't think it's like, hey, I'm giving you money. You better go spend it and get me great players. He knows that they're going to try and get players. He's just making it easy for them, or easier.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's making it easier for them.
Sending that message. But I'm saying that message is implied, and it's making it easier for them to do the things that they have to do, just like you said. The OG stuff, and then just one other thing with that afterwards. With the OG stuff, I was hoping that, and this doesn't preclude that, but I'm hoping that they get that wrapped up soon, because I would like, Thibodeau has a way of putting a challenge on a player, and in the offseason, getting them to do things that might help them later on in the season. And I feel like OG, with the kind of player he's been all the time, in terms of that injury-prone thing, it's always like that soft tissue stuff. Maybe his plea to OG, if we could get him under contract and everything in the books, his off-season plea is to do whatever you can and to get the training staff behind you to work on your conditioning so that I can run you the way that I need to. And maybe he might change the way that he runs him a little bit, but he needs him to at least make the effort and to be in-house and have that on his mind in the off-season to work on that stuff. And as far as what you were talking about, I think Booker, I like what you're saying with KD, and I think it would really work, but somehow I feel like Booker could be that guy, only because of his age. Of course, his siren goes now.
Yep.
But only because of his age and because of the fact that, you know, like, he seems like he would be somebody who could, because he is a underrated defensively, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to leave you alone because the siren is killing me, Max.
And
there goes the fire truck.
That's the only thing that could stop Val from talking. That's it. If it weren't for those sirens, we'd never be rid of them. No truth to the rumor that I had the sirens. No truth to the rumor that I hired the police officers to get it going to eventually stop Val. The thing about Val that makes the conversations, and I love Val, and this isn't to make fun of him because he makes great points. He gives a great call. Love Val. But what makes the calls seem longer than most calls who talk and like to talk is he constantly throws in, if you've noticed this, he constantly throws in, well, and you were talking about this yesterday, so I don't know if it's the right time to bring it up, but I'll bring it up anyway. Just bring it up. Like prefacing everything with, oh, I would have if I had only called the other day. I'm not sure if you saw this. Like, he throws in all stuff like that, and it adds to the call. But that's Val. I love it. If it weren't for that siren, he'd still be talking. But he's not wrong. I didn't understand. Like, he's not, there is no, Brady, let me try and get my words together. Brady, when he was saving the money for the Patriots, expected some talent around him. Right, they already won championships, and he was doing it for that. And maybe he got frustrated with the level of talent or certain things with the money, and then eventually he wanted his money. I don't think Brunson in any way is sending a message to Leon Rose or puts the onus on Leon Rose to go spend that money. I mean, any money, it's a cap sport. Any money Leon Rose has, he's going to try and spend on good players. It's just a matter of if the right players become available or, like, I don't think it's going to be like, hey, if I'm saving money here, you're not putting it in your pocket, right? Like, Dolan's not putting this money in his pocket. Dolan's going to put money into the Knicks. Like, there is no fear of that. That Brunson doesn't have to worry about that at all. Brunson is doing it so that they could have more money to go out and get good players. Absolutely, but there's no onus on Dolan and the team. Like, don't you pocket this money now. Like, he knows the money's going into the team. It's just a matter of getting the right players, having the right players become available to spend on. But I don't think he's sending a message or trying to impart that sort of thing. It's just him being a good dude, him being a great guy and a great teammate and someone who's more concerned about helping the franchise become great and win championships than he is making every single dollar. That's it. That's all it comes down to. He is making a choice that I could make generational money and still try and help the team win, or I can really make generational money and make it harder to get better players in here to help me win. I'd rather make, you know, $100 million and win a championship than make $175 million and not win a championship. That's the choice, and those are arbitrary numbers. Those aren't actual contract numbers. I was just throwing out numbers. Like, that's the deal. That's what it is. And that's, in many ways, we could look at it however you want. Some people would call that foolish. You could win a championship even if you take the most money, or you could lose a championship or never win a championship by taking less, ultimately do what's right for you and your family. But this is what's right for him and his family. What's right for him and his family is being happy trying to compete for a championship and still having gobs of money. And again, we don't even know if he'll do it, but I'm hoping he'll say, it sounds like if he gets extended this year, it's going to cost him some money down the road, but it's going to help the Knicks try and build a team. And I think he recognizes what happens if he wins a championship here. Because unlike any other team, like if Aaron Judge and Juan Soto win a championship for the New York Yankees, it's a big deal. They're, you know, thrusted into a new category, especially as captain for Judge. He'll be beloved. He'll be one of the great Yankees of all time. You know, he'll make that throng. He'll be in Monument Park. He'll be a champion. A lot of things change for Judge in some ways. Soto wins a championship in pinstripes, makes it easier to stay. I don't know. It helps them, clearly, and it helps Judge. You know, if you're the quarterback of the New York Giants or the New York Jets, Aaron Rodgers. Now, Aaron Rodgers is a little different, already a Hall of Famer, but you bring a championship to the New York Jets, you are gold. I mean, in this city, it changes his life. It changes the perspective of everybody looking at him. Now he's a two-time Super Bowl champion. Plus, he brought one to the Jets. He overcame years of being inept to win this. But giant quarterback, we've seen it from Eli Manning. Obviously a Ranger, haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1994, but I don't know if there is another team. I don't know if there is another place where you could win and become a legend in this town. If you take the Knicks to an NBA Finals, now, theoretically, or not even theoretically, realistically, the Jets have been longer, right? The Jets, 1969, 73 for the Knicks. But I still think, because it's the only basketball team, and that's not to knock the Nets. I understand they're in Brooklyn. But the Knicks are the one basketball team in the city. Football fans are divided. Baseball fans are divided. It's Knicks. And if he could lead the Knicks to a championship, it puts him on another level of superstars in this town. And it changes his life dramatically. And it's, especially, you know, Villanova, the Big East, played in Madison Square Garden. Just the full circle nature of his career in that moment would be phenomenal. And he's hopefully willing to part with some money to help make that happen.